Hello and welcome to a controversial episode of Muse on Minis, episode 89.
Musing and amusing.
I'm not sure we're going to be musing and amusing tonight.
Controversial, you know. And
89, the most controversial number.
Mm. Hey, Chad.
God.
Chad. Guess what day it is?
Controversial day.
What day is it, Colin?
Hump Day!
Got it out of the way.
God damn it.
The only hump day of the day.
Calling bullcrap on that right now.
Yeah. This is Fat Asian, and I play Protector of Menoth. I will play Minions, and I hope to play Convergence of Zeros someday.
I like this, but it gives me so little to troll. Speaking of which, I play trolls. My name is Chad.
You needed to add a little, like, in that.
What a man. I play trolls.
Yeah. That would have perfect. Lance, just fix that for us. And this is Crump, and I'm playing Retribution.
Keith. And I played the broken stuff.
Colin, I play Scorn and Protectorate.
Nice.
Hump Day!
That wasn't me.
Shut. God damn it.
That was our camel.
I said
that
I'm
was our token camel.
Muse on Minis camel.
Can we get one of those?
Colin.
It doesn't work with a two syllable.
Terrible.
Crump.
It's Wednesday.
Hump Day!
It only works with one syllable names.
God, it is not funny when you guys do it.
It's not funny when
it's
you
not
do
funny
it
when you do it either.
It's only funny when the camel does it.
I'm not even sure it's funny then.
It's really not.
I thought it was funny.
So I have a confession to make. I'm a little grumpy tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't get enough sleep last night.
Would you say you're a grumpy wargamer?
I wish I was.
Oh. Oh, we could have done a.
I wish I was a grumpy warrior.
We need to work on those. Yeah, actually.
That joke wasn't half bad.
It was all bad. the Muppet
Show. No, that's not how it goes. It goes, really? And then you say,
you messed it up.
God, man. We do need to practice
redo
those.
It. Lance can cut it out.
He's not going to.
The moment is past.
Why are you grumpy, John?
I didn't get enough sleep last night.
Didn't it take a nappy nap today?
I tried, but then some inconsiderate people showed up a half an hour early and woke me up.
I just came downstairs and watched Newsroom.
Same with
I didn't wake you up.
I know, my son did. He's like, your friends are downstairs.
You always complain about us being late.
No, I want you on time.
Not
I want
early.
You early. I don't want you late. I want you on time.
You've said 100 times that we can come over whenever we want.
Yeah, that's true. That has happened. Just don't wake him up.
No, it's fine. Look, I'm sorry. I can't have an off day. I'm a little grouchy. I've been grouchy in the last two episodes. I apologize.
This feels like a skit, but I know it's not. Yeah. It feels like this should be going somewhere.
But it won't.
But no, it's just going to get more and more awkward for you, the listener.
All right, so
it's a little awkward for me too.
God damn it! Why couldn't you guys just let that silence like stretch on for like a couple more seconds?
Lance, cut that in.
Cut in that silence.
Actually,
he
silence,
can do that.
Silence is really easy to cut in.
Yeah, you just.
If Lance,
I hope he does. That would be glorious.
We just need a 5-second pause there, and then like a.
No. You need one of these. You need a.
Or a.
God, people are so pissed right now. Oh, man.
Yeah,
wait, where's food? We need to start eating.
Oh God, give me some chips.
No, we're not going to eat.
My favorite thing after the long silence is just like...
So...
No, my favorite thing after the long silence is just a short and quick...
All right. So I'm going to take this podcast on to War Machine direction. A week ago, which will now be 2 weeks ago for this podcast, I went to Tower Games, probably my favorite place to play in a tournament that isn't a con. Their tables are freaking gorgeous. And their terrain is gorgeous and playable.
And their tables are up high, which I appreciate. And so does my back.
Yes.
Yep. And they have the best gas station chicken next door ever.
Gas station chicken!
Serious. It's not, like, when I say gas station chicken, you're probably like, ugh. That doesn't sound appetizing at all, but it is amazing.
No, it's really legit. We were walking to Tower Games, and there's a giant grill on the side of the road that is on fire. And my brother's just like, why is there a table on fire next to that gas station? And then Grant's just like, oh, they're making chicken. It's really legit. We can eat it later. And it's just like, there's just a table on fire. What the This is bizarre.
Crump has some battle reports that he practiced to get down to 15 minutes that I'm looking very forward to hearing.
Yeah, I'm going to time this. Let's see how it goes. I may have lied on the 15 minutes.
I'm going to say, for the record, I'm not going to interrupt you while you're giving your battle report.
I bet you one dinner that doesn't happen.
Okay, it's a bet.
What? No, I'm not taking this. You can't be in control of your own fate. That was like with Keith or Chad.
Are you watching on the bet?
Actually,
Keith, I got this.
I might actually take that bet just because I know at some point he won't be able to resist himself.
Come on, he'll still do it. Like,
round one. All right.
Before you start, I'm not interrupting, but before you start, do we have a bet or not?
No, I'm good. What? I don't want to steal money from you. I feel bad
about
it.
It's not stealing money.
I just feel bad.
Donating money to a good cause.
All right. Jesus Christ. All right, so I showed up to this tournament with Raven and Osayan, which I'd probably get a lot of flack from. When I was talking with a few people about it, they're just like, oh, Raven, Osayan, you're just drawn dead to Epic Wolf. And I'm like, yep, sure am. Just get a Dodger and have two really well-rounded lists that can, one, shoot tons of stuff off the table, either infantry or heavies. They both do the same thing. One list is more skewed towards heavies, that being Osayan. The other one is more skewed towards infantry swarms, but they both cover each other. Like, they're both doing the same game, and their matchups, I couldn't really think of too many bad matchups for them besides Epic Loth is a problem. Menoth, sort of, but not
Lilith
really.
And Kaya.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Deceleration, I feel like, is like Lucant is going to kick you in the nuts. But
yeah, that guy doesn't exist yet, though, so I wasn't worried about him showing up.
And then some Haley builds.
Right.
Deceleration is going to be a problem. But yeah, anyway, you're fine.
So the Raven list I was playing was the one I dojoed a while back, except for Alara is not out, so she got replaced with an Arcanist and Silas. And then the Osayan list I played was him, two Banshees, two Arcanists, Invictors plus UA, two units of Stormfall Archers, Ayana and Holt, and Houseguard Halberdiers. Sort of threw that list out there in like 5 seconds. Ended up loving it. Like, that list is really, really brutal. And then my specialists, because this was the first time I've ever been able to play with specialists for both lists, were Mage Hunter, Strike Force, plus UA. Pretty kick in the nuts. Round one, I sat across from Matthew Lust. The scenario was Incursion. I decided to take Osayan because one of his lists was Runes of War. The other list was Jarl that had Buffalo in it. And I felt like Osayan was good against both of those because I can shoot Buffalo way off the table and can shoot Mulg from range dead. I ended up going first. I had the majority of my army in the center of the table. Off to the right side, I put a Banshee and Stormfall Archers to kind of go with that flag depending on which one disappeared. He ran Boomhauer straight up the middle and his Tuffalo on the right flank and his Nyss on the left. The middle flag ended up disappearing, obviously. On his first turn, he had tactical supremacy, the Boomhowlers. So they ran... Well, he had used the Runebearer mini-feet to give them quicken, and they ran way up there, and then Jarl attacked supremacy them when he activated. So they were just, like, way up in my face. Probably too far forward, because on my second turn, I managed to shoot all but three of them off of the table.
Yeah, I think that's way too far forward.
Yeah.
Especially if you're replacing Quicken with Tax Supremacy, so then they lose the defensive bonus.
Right. And
like, I understand that the order of operations, if you want to get them farther at the table, you have to do it in that order, but like, that's
right.
Giving you a unit of Boomhauers for free.
Yeah.
Was he trying to jam past?
Maybe.
Incursion.
Right.
Yeah, maybe.
But it was without knowing like what flag was going away, but I just was like, I'll just kill them all. The middle flag ended up disappearing, and I was still just like, well, there's like seven Boomhowlers for my Invictors to eat.
I mean, Boomhowlers running 16, running 16 inches is still pretty much jamming past.
Yeah,
like
I agree.
The difference between 16 and 19 is just 3 more inches for your opponent, in my opinion.
Did he cycle quick into something else? Maybe he thought the 4+ tough would keep the Boomhowlers alive. And
maybe
quick.
He cycled it to the Long Riders.
I think he cycled it to the Long Riders. Or that may have been the next turn. At some point, Long Riders got quickened. But the Long Riders were out of... I positioned myself out of throw range of the Long Riders just to, you know, whatever. Hit and just shot 7 Boomhauers to death and tried shooting some Stormfall archers at Nyss, and I ended up killing like 2 of them, maybe.
Eh, not bad.
Yeah. A couple of them were
range drift, I'm guessing.
A couple of them were Silena seeking missiles, but failed to damage. Then on his turn, I had left my army outside of the throw range of the Long Riders, and there were Halberdiers over there across from them. He decided to bull rush and try to slam some of his Long Riders over my Halberdiers, which I was kind of a little confounded by.
Do you have Horthal?
Yeah.
I think bull rush is such a trap, in my opinion. I can tell you the number of times I've bull rushed in the last 10 games I've used with Long Riders. 0.
I don't know. He ended up bull rushing and slamming 2 of his Long Riders. One of them killed 2 or 3 Halberdiers, and then another one ended up killing a Halberdier and knocking down my Banshee and doing 4 damage to it or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other side of the board, he had set up to... maybe I went second. I don't know. He had set up to, like, score a point on the flag if I didn't come to contest it by putting a swamp troll base-to-base with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he Jarl-feeded to get... The Long Riders were way out of the feed range and maybe just had a little line of sight blocking to some of his battle group, but the Swamp Horror was half...
Swamp Troll?
Swamp Troll, sorry. Was half concealed by a cloud, but the other half not, so I was able to walk a Banshee over and shoot it away from the flag by slamming it. but yeah, this is the turn that I feeded with Ossian, shot all of the Long Riders off of the table because they were harmed, and Invictors are dice minus 3 on the feed turn, rolling 3 dice. Like, one Invictor will kill one troll. Or pretty close to. And killed Horthal and then put my Banshee over on that side. and I think I scored a point that turn. And I ended up killing the Swamp Troll because I knocked it down and then 2 Stormfall Archers finished it off. So he's now in a point where I think he has 1 control point and I have 1 control point. And he decides to try to take his bomber and slam my Banshee away from the flag, and then tactical supremacy to the flag so he can score a second point, which I didn't see coming at all. And it was a pretty sweet maneuver for him to, like, slam and then tactical supremacy to the flag, because there's it's pretty unlikely for a bomber to kill a Banshee in melee. and then he ran the boom howlers that were left, quickened them, and ran them across the table to go and contest the flag that I had based the Banshee with to score a point. On my turn, I was able to clear out the rest of the Boomhauers that were there, and I decided Ossian camping like 1 to run base-to-base to let the flag and dominate it.
Thus, so when you said that you killed all the Boomhauers last turn, you meant the Long Riders?
No, I had killed all the Long Riders on my second turn.
So yes.
And then this is the third turn where I've killed the rest of the Boomhauers.
Right.
So Domin-
I'm right. Yeah.
Okay. Dominating the flag, get 2 points. I'm now in a scenario. I set him up for this scenario. We had to kill my caster, or I was going to win the game by just dominating the flag again, because his Impaler frenzied, so it could not run over to my flag to contest it.
Mm-hmm.
And then my caster on a hill camping 1. I'm def 17, arm 16. Jarl had to, like, snipe himself, and the dice didn't work out, because he's coin flips the hit. And then dice off 4. So I ended up winning on scenario.
I feel like you gave him a better assassination than you needed to.
I agree.
I feel like there's no way he should have lost because he should have known to play Winter Crows.
That unit's so good. Double gun.
Double gun.
Double gun.
Double gun, 23 inch charge. We got this.
So you're going to keep your battle reports to under 15 minutes.
Yep.
And you've used 11.
Due to interruptions.
I didn't interrupt you once.
I mean, I was helping him clarify some stuff.
Yep.
Also throwing in my 2 cents on the troll matchup.
Yeah.
Hump day! I was expecting him to feed a lot earlier, but he didn't, and then was just able to kill the Long Riders that weren't affected by the feed. Round 2, I played against my brother. It was the one where there's 2 long scenarios with the objectives in them.
Process.
Yeah, that one. Process. He was playing Resk. I chose to take Ossian again because Ossian will chew through a bunch of gators. I ended up choosing to go first in the event that... I don't know if it was actually right because of how the Rask feeding turn plays out. But I went first, ran a bunch of stuff forward. He basically feeded on his second turn, which puts me on the back foot. I left two Banshees in the zone. And
he
maybe,
said you went first?
So yeah, I went first.
He feeded on the bottom of one.
Right.
Okay.
Because if he doesn't, then yeah. Whoop, there goes his army. So he feeded on the bottom of one. I kind of backed out of the zones. This is usually how my game is against Rask and my brother Go, is I'll concede to him 2-3 scenario points and then just battle back and like destroy his army the next turn. But I had left... some stuff in the zone that he actually wasn't able to clear, so he was only able to get 1 point. And then on my following turn, Ossian feeded, and I was able to shoot off 12 or 13 gators and Snapjaw. Snapjaw had come and killed my Banshee, but I was able to kill him in return with some other stuff. And then, you know...
Finish him.
Yeah.
So one thing I want to point out about your plan... which is concede some points and back up. He can also back up to where he just threats to the back of the zone because he's got a 12-inch charge against all your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, deny you a lot of your shooting. You'll get some, but you won't kill, like, you won't be able to kill 13 gators in a turn if he does it right.
I had put the Invictors, like, just outside of 12 inches so they couldn't get charged. But... still dangerous enough because they hadn't mini-feeded yet, so they have a 19-inch threat on their guns.
No, I'm aware.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is he doesn't have to overcommit into you. He can just send a few gators forward to tie up your stuff and force you to, like, deal with them, and then you're in danger of losing on scenario.
Potentially.
Yeah. I'm just... I don't like seeding points in 2013 all that much. It's dangerous. You lose really fast.
I agree.
I only ended up seeding one. Because it was the objective getting destroyed. Because he wasn't able to... The zone that he destroyed the objective in, he wasn't able to kill the Banshee that was in that zone. And so... You know, like, I didn't necessarily concede the points. Like, I had some Halberdiers in the zone that were kind of fodder. And
that's
then
fine.
Two Banshees on the farthest points in the zones to just... So whichever one he went after, he'd also have to kill a Heavy in. But yeah, I blew off, you know, 27 points of his army in the game after that. He tried to come back on scenario and set up this, if I didn't kill his caster, then he would have probably won on scenario. But the assassination attempt was pretty high. Rask was within aiming range of a Banshee. And Ossian walked up, shot him, boosted a hit, gave him minus 2 def, and then the Banshee aimed, shot him. And then Holt finished him off. So, you know.
GG.
Yep.
Round 3.
Round 3, I played against Nigel. God, I miss seeing that guy in War Machine. Holy crap.
Oh, man. Sad that I didn't go just to hang out with Nigel.
Yeah.
Also, Alex Grant.
Played against him in Madison a couple weeks ago.
Also, Beanish.
Oh, I love Beanish.
He showed up. He wasn't playing War Machine, but he was just hanging out for a while.
What is his store?
Right. Yeah. It is. He was playing P. Sorcia. I sat down with with Raven. And I sided in my Mage Hunter Strike Force. I took out the Halberdiers, because Mage Hunter Strike Force are pretty scary against Sorcia. And the scenario that it was, I didn't really need to go contest zones on the other side of the table. So Strike Force made an excellent substitution. On his turn one, he was so afraid of... He went first. On his turn one, he was so afraid of the Raven assassination that Sorcia kind of ran over to the left side of the table and didn't go too far forward. On my first turn, I debated Raven feeding and sniping all of the Strike Force to kill, like, all of the Nis that were in his list. I debated it for about the first 2 minutes of my turn and then just decided against it. Instead, just, like, killed the... Pretty much effectively killed the Great Bear that does no knockdown. The most important one to kill.
Bear Crouch.
Yes, sure. And then on the... I had only moved Raven, like, 2 or 3 inches up out of my deployment zone because I knew Sorcia can do some crazy, like, freeze you to death, and all of the Nis were on that side of the table across from me, as well as, like, Kel Balok, Epic Eris. Like, if I got frozen, it was going to be bad. He sort of misjudged it. He was just like, eh, I'm going to go for it because it was a good source of feed turn. He charged, you know, wind rushed, whatever, came forward, feeded, ended up being about a half an inch out from my caster.
That's good positioning, Grum.
Thanks.
It's hard to eyeball 27 inches.
Not for me.
Yeah. All right. You look at the table and you're like, that's 20.
That's the size of my
inches.
Penis. Wait, what?
Anyway.
He didn't really get much to, you know, do on his feet turn. The NIS couldn't shoot my models because they're still stealth. And then on my feet, on my following turn, it was in this sort of kill or be killed scenario. I had Sorsha allocate, or Sorsha, Raven allocate 3 to Hyperion and 2 to the Banshee because it had to shake because it was in her feet, which meant that it got to aim. But I had Raven go first, walk forward into her 12 inches, shoot with the feet up. I need a 13, which is approximately 1 in 4. It's 25.9%. Missed, so that was her. I had the Banshee go, aim, and originally I was just like, it's going to shoot at Sorsha, but I need a 13. And there was conveniently one NIS directly in front of Sorsha by about a half an inch. I'm just like, oh, never mind, I'll just shoot that NIS, and I need a 10, and I'll momentum her into Sorsha, and then Sorsha will just fall over. Missed my 10. And I was just like, oh, well, that's not going to go well. All right, Hyperion go. Aims. He needs 13s. All of his attack rolls are boosted, and he has 3 focus, so any of them that hit are pretty dangerous, because he was only camping 1, so the hand cannons are dice off 3, and the big gun is dice plus 3. I ended up missing all of those. Boosted blast damage and did about 6 or 7 to her, because I had drifted just a little bit off of her. And then, at this point, I'm running out of options. I have 3 Invictors that aren't in the feet. One of them is the UA. He just aims. They many feet. He aims and shoots her. He needs a 10 to hit, or an 11. Hits. Does quite a bit of damage. The other two CRA her. Tends to hit. They end up hitting their
they
second.
Double gunned?
Yes, they double gunned. I didn't get to shoot twice, though.
Ah. He screwed you.
Why didn't you triple gun for the for the 9 to hit?
To do enough. If I triple gun her, the odds of me doing enough damage to kill her.
No, you're rolling 3 dice on her feet, right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Also, any of the CRAs you get, the 2-man CRA with a 10, you have a reroll for combined arms.
Right. Where the officer just needed to roll an 11 with 3 dice, which isn't too unlikely. Yeah. He hit, and then the 10 with 2 chances.
I'm with you now.
So I ended up putting her to 2 hit points from that. I was just like, holy crap. Like, I'm all out of options. Epic Ares, you're engaged by a great bear. You might not survive this free strike, but if you do, you're going to win me this game. She didn't survive the free strike. Man.
The great bear needs a 6 to hit?
Yep. Which, you know, is likely, but, you know, if he misses Ares with 3 dice on Sorsha, knocking off her focus, dice off 4.
Yeah, if you're all in, that should have been your first play there.
Agreed.
I didn't have to be all in if the Banshee would have hit.
Like, well, you already gone with Raven, I thought.
What?
You'd already gone with Raven and moved up and shot her. Like, if Raven's already in the all-in position there.
So actually, this brings up, this game illustrates something that I kind of want to talk about. I don't know what the odds are of you getting your assassination there. Probably pretty good if you hit your 10. Pretty bad if you don't. Seem about right.
I put 5 shots into her that were 25%ers. And then the Invictors are pretty good to hit.
Yeah. But what was the opportunity cost for that? So I see a lot of people, like, for example, on the Red Forums, I saw that some people were critical of Danny Modesto's play in that they saw some assassinations that he could go for with Ron that were decent assassinations. They might even have been 60% assassinations. But every assassination you go for has an opportunity cost, mm-hmm. Something that you're not taking away from your opponent. And I'm kind of wondering about the board situation. Do you think that was the best play to go for that assassination? Let's say it's 70-30. Are you more likely, more than likely to win if you, like, kill a bunch of his stuff?
The way the board was set up, I wasn't going to be able to kill too much stuff because the Hyperion.
If most of his army's frozen.
Right.
Then, yeah.
Like, all of the Strike Force were frozen, and all but the three Invictors that I activated to shoot her were frozen. So that leaves my Hyperion, which is far. It's a little bit off to the right, so it's out of the range of the Nyss and stuff. So I wouldn't have been able to get them. And, like, attrition wasn't really a good option. So I just opted for the assassination.
So that's
like, if you would have seen the board, you would have just been like, that's probably the best option.
So, right. So then we often get people that ask us, like, how do I get better at this game? How do you create a board situation against Sorcerer where you don't let her feet on everything and force you into killing her?
Looking back at that game, like I said on turn one, I talked to Nigel quite a bit about it after the game. It was funny because in his attempt at assassination to me, he's just like, Freezing Grip Raven. And I was just like, Freezing Grip? The hell, Nigel? He's just like, what? I'm a stationary here. I'm like, okay, Tempest? I hope you don't miss.
Tempest?
Where you could Tempest me and then miss and then still probably get me. And he just, after the game, was like, oh, yeah. That would have been way better. Like, damn it, Nigel. Plus, Freezing Grip doesn't do damage, does it? No. Whereas Tempest does.
And if she's close enough that... Did she freeze Raven? Oh, she came up just a little short of freezing Raven, but you shot at her?
No, no. Oh, on the feet, she didn't freeze Raven. Right. And then I tried to...
On the follow-up turn, but you shot at her, so she could just, like, Windrush, walk, and Tempest you from 2 inches away and knock you down.
Right.
Or charge something.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But...
Dealer's choice. Like, she could just run something.
I spent quite a bit of time afterwards talking about with Nigel about the matchup and everything and how it played out, because like I said, for about the first 2 minutes of my first turn, I was just like, I kind of want to feed here and just kill all of those Nyss dead and some like probably all of the Nyss and all of the Widowmaker marksmen, or not marksmen, the Widowmakers. Like, looking back on it, I probably
would trade my feet for that.
Right.
That's a really good way to cascade into a win.
I was debating it for about 2 minutes and just was doing the back and forth and decided against it. Looking back on it, I would have taken them 100%. So, but, you know, in those time crunch situations, you're just like, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's often good, like Keith says, to save your feet in that particular instance because it makes Sorcerer way...
Scared to death.
Yeah.
That was why I ended up deciding against it, was I was just like, you know, it basically forces her to feed defensively or get killed by Strike Force eventually, mm-hmm. if the game plays out that way.
Although, if she neutralizes the Strike Force, did he have Tack in the list?
No. His list, actually, I can go over that. Nyss, Kel'Balok, Winter Guard Marksman, or...
Widowmaker Marksman.
Epic Eris, Behemoth, Orin Midwinter, Great Bears, Dougal, Hearn and Jern.
Dougal's so good in that list.
Ruckershaw, or not Ruckershaw, Harlan Versch. I don't remember. Oh, Reinhold was in the list. He called it Ocean's 18. Because P. Sorcia was going to go rob a bank, and she hired 18 mercenaries to help her.
I remember him telling me about that, actually.
Yeah. It
sounded like fun.
He should get Terran in that list now.
That's just...
The Lely's Gunmaid?
Well, except for...
Yeah.
Right. Oh,
she won't work for Kador.
Yeah, good point. Good point, Keith.
But he should get her in that list.
Yeah. Well.
Subtly done. Well done.
No, it was great to... to play
That'd
Nigel.
Be really good with Sorcia, though, for line of sight mm-hmm. on her feet.
Yeah, it'd be really dumb.
Mm-hmm. Well,
although the line of sight thing is... The line of sight thing for her feet is kind of weird because of her movement shenanigans. It's not hard for her to get line of sight to the things she needs to freeze often.
Unless you're High Reclaimer.
It can be.
A little bit.
Part of the reason I decided not to feed my turn one against Nigel was... You remember that soft core where I was rolling hard nines to kill his Nyss and he was just... Forget. He just ended up tilting.
He didn't tilt at all.
Well,
that was what was
he
so
tilted for
about
2 seconds, and then was just like, by the time I rolled like the fifth nine in a row, he was like, yeah, all right, sure, why not?
Like, yeah, like, why wouldn't that hit?
I was really just hoping I could relive that without my feet. Just like my strike force walking up to his niche, she'd be like, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9. And just be like, this always happens when I play Nigel. It's great. I also roll the hard 9 to get his niche. But yeah, no, it was a good game. And actually, talking to Nigel afterward, you know, we both had pretty good feedback for one another.
Oh, man. I love playing games against Nigel. Like, talk about chill, sweet opponents.
Oh, yeah. He's great.
Yeah.
He's part of that old guard, actually, which segues into another topic.
Well, sweet. Let's get off this godforsaken
battle report.
I mean,
oh, my last round was like against Alex Grant, though.
No, you didn't have another round. That was it.
Alex Grant.
Oh, I love Alex Grant, though. Why do you put me in this situation?
Hold on. Let's see if I can guess. He took Raven and shot everything off the table and won.
No, I ended up losing on Dice Down because I gave him one scenario point.
Oh.
Problem with gun lines.
Fail.
Do better next time, Alex.
Actually,
what? No. Alex won.
Wait, what?
Alex won.
Alex, you could have done better by like, crushing his spirit, too.
Yeah.
Well. What? Good job, Alex. You're my boy.
Good job, Crump. So you went 2-2?
Yep.
What do you think of Rhett?
I like it. I really like that Ossian list. That's what I learned. I actually feel like that Raven list and that Ossian list pair really well together. Despite them just being stone cold dead to like Epic Wolf, I just don't care. Like, I started playing Rhett like I did in Magic. When I'm building lists, I'm just like, oh, I can make my list really good against the majority of the field and just be stone cold dead in this matchup. And just, you know, if I play that matchup, still try and give it a game, but I'm probably drawn dead.
Just camp all your focus and run directly at Lilith.
Yeah. Probably end out okay.
Hope that you don't get set on fire
and die.
I mean, in this entire year, I have not seen Epic Lilith at a tournament.
She's
once.
Not good in SR 2013. So
when people were critiquing, they were just like,
"So it's the year of Rhett."
Oh man! Oh.
No Lilith, no Kaya. Here they come.
I mean, that was something I kind of wanted to talk
How
about.
How will we stop them?
Like, what are the merits of just I'm drawing dead in this matchup to be better against? Like, I was trying to build these lists in such a way that every time I see Rhett players go to a tournament, they get into list chicken. No matter what, like, every time. It's like one of their lists has a bunch of bad matchups, and the other one has a bunch of bad matchups, but they each cover each other's bad matchups. But you're just like, well, who's going to pull the trigger? Am I going to be screwed, or am I going to, like, crush this game? And I was just trying to avoid that by building two lists that played the same game, but had a very well-rounded.
Doesn't that open you up to more bad matchups, though?
No, but you're just very susceptible to your few bad matchups.
Right. Yeah. Like, the bad matchups, I'm just like, I'm dead. Like, I don't care. I would rather just completely, like we said, you got to run hot in a tournament, and I'm just, would rather have, just be drawing dead to have less list chicken. Mm. If that makes sense.
I'd have to spend more time thinking about it.
I used to do that against Krix.
Yeah, the only issue I have with the way you've done it is you've built two gun lines.
But they're both gun lines that are.
There's a lot
of
ways.
Difference between.
There's a lot of ways to neutralize shooting.
The difference between this gun line and most gun lines is that Invictors are an amazing gun line that do work in melee.
Yeah, but I still feel like they don't beat Bane Thralls. You know what I mean? Like.
Why not?
Because Bane Thralls have tough. Because they're going to get there.
They're tough. They're stealth. They have the same threat range.
Superior with curse.
Yeah. And, like, your Jack's not going to survive, probably, to give them flank. Like, I don't know.
Well, you don't need flank against Banes.
Sure.
Yeah, that's fine. But, I don't know. I just feel like... Just standard Krix Bane Thralls would give you a lot of problems. You're going to see them.
Raven should be able to handle it. Or, I mean, Ossian can drop boosted templates in there. Or just templates in general. Which aren't phenomenal, but there's something.
Yeah, that was actually something I found in the game against Alex Grant. In that Raven list, I shot everything off of the table. Except for how that game basically went was I went second, killed everything. except for the Bane Thralls and Tartarus and Canker Worm. And because I wasn't thinking about the scenario, I committed Hyperion to the zone earlier than I needed to. It's the one where there's a giant circle in the middle and then the two objectives just outside of the circle. And if that objective is in your Warcaster's control area, they can't dominate the zone. So I was just like, crap, I need to start like getting in the zone or he's going to start dominating and this is going to be a problem. But he couldn't because my objective was still alive.
And he was playing who?
Peelitch.
Oh, yeah. He can't.
Right. It's impossible for him to. So I committed Hyperion. You know, had I thought about that, I wouldn't have done this. But committed Hyperion, put 5 Banes under a template, tough checked all of them, passed 4 tough checks, 1 died. And then Hyperion just got murdered. So what I decided was I'm going to start testing the lists with Disco over a Banshee, which is better for the Crix matchup, which is kind of what Raven wants, and is still a well-rounded heavy, so can be good in other matchups.
It also gives you a leg up if you get into a firefight.
Right.
That plus 2 armor is relevant.
I could never leave home without Ron, and he's a boss in the Crix matchup.
I do love that guy.
Yep.
I was just
that's what I was thinking, is just...
You could just shorten that to he's just a boss.
He is a boss.
Right.
He's one of those casters that does everything well. He plays for attrition, he plays for scenario, he plays for assassination.
Yep.
Triple threat.
Yep. He's got a dynamic play style with a lot of versatility.
I've been taking Iran to every tournament. I wanted to take a step back.
Like,
I agree, though. That guy's a boss. Round 1, I actually played Incursion. I was just like, why did I not bring Ron?
I, too, went to this tournament. I went 2-2. We're not going to do battle reports because they don't like to let me talk. So
that's
good.
Yeah, that's the reason.
Yep. And also, his battle report took 38 minutes.
Yeah, you're welcome. We didn't have anything else to talk about. But that tournament was sweet. God, Tower is like the sweetest store.
Yeah, we need to go to more Tower tournaments.
They actually
I need to not work on the freaking weekend, which sucks.
They have a freaking hobby table at the shop that has like 6 desk lamps and also 2 air compressors in it.
Yep.
What shops have that? That's amazing.
That is exactly what I want in our shop, is just a painting table.
Yeah, that's not happening ever.
Yeah, I realize that, but I would love to have that.
I don't know that I wouldn't say that. That's not.
I mean,
every
Wednesday, Dave and Matt basically set up like a big painting studio.
Right, but they can't have like a permanent table because of the volume of Magic events that Mayhem runs.
Or because of the volume of Yu-Gi-Oh! Events.
I was talking about Des Moines.
Oh.
Yeah, they just have a unique layout that allows for the register to watch over that table continuously so that random Yu-Gi-Oh! Kids aren't peeing in the air compressor or whatever Yu-Gi-Oh! Kids do.
I'm sure they
They probably would do that. I would not put that past them.
Hey, Yu-Gi-Oh! Kids are pretty disrespectful.
They really are.
Well, I mean, peeing in the air compressor just seems right? Like,
disrespectful in much the same way as people on the Retribution forums.
Oh, damn, that just happened. Son, oh, snap.
I don't want to say that. It's only like one person.
Yeah.
What?
Also, inconsiderate.
Is it Yami Yugi?
Inconsiderate, like, people in the main boards.
Right?
Yeah. There was a thread that I'm going to rant about for a little bit here. That was about how much information...
Time for what grinds Keith's gears.
Oh, yes.
How much information you deserve... The way the thread was titled...
Wait, was this the main boards?
...even irked me, yes.
It's locked by now. So.
Yeah, it's long locked. I'm sure it's still in my subscription.
How did I not see this?
It's how much information
are you entitled to?
Did we start this?
Are you entitled to ask for? Something along those lines. How much information are you entitled to from your opponent?
All of it. It's an open information game.
It is indeed an open information game. And no one disagreed on that point, that it's an open information game and that you're entitled to all the information.
I disagree.
What was disagreed upon was when we started getting technical about the term threat range. And this is really just not difficult. Much like we've talked about many issues in the past, there is a simple solution that people will just blindly refuse to see because they want to believe that I'm not sure that the world is out to get them or that they don't need to be nice to people, or I don't know why, but they just disagree with the easy and obvious solution.
Yeah.
And so the point came down to, it was like, can you ask your opponent what is the threat range of X model? And the two sides shook out to be yes, and a variety of reasons for no, which included it is unsportsmanlike to ask the question.
Okay.
Yep, that happened. It is unsportsmanlike to ask the question. It is an imprecise question.
What's your threat range is an imprecise question?
Uh-huh.
Well, to be fair, if you're asking me what Mulligan's threat range and Makeda's two
22.
List, 23.
Yeah. Whatever.
With a push.
With a push.
You got to push.
But, and then, so, but then, even when you're like, it's imprecise because you have to factor in all the factors, you just give them the breakdown.
What's imprecise?
Okay, I'll give you the breakdown. It's six plus three plus
three. No one
cares.
Colin, stop talking. Colin,
plus two plus
Colin,
two.
Shut up and let him talk.
And one. And maybe another two? How many twos did I?
There's so much math, we just lost track of it. It's 23.
But yes, some threat ranges are long and complicated, and then, but all you have to do is appraise your opponent of the abilities. You don't necessarily have to give them, like, the answer is X, but you want to lay out the abilities that are
there. You can charge.
There.
This caster can give him plus two with this spell. My caster can also give him plus two with a feat, and then he's got X, Y, and Z abilities that let him do blah.
Right, exactly. Or it's like, people are like, but what about non-linear crap like Shifting Stones? You'd be like, Shifting Stones do this.
Actually,
stones,
every
time I play teleport, if you're a heavy base, or if you're a large base.
Every time I tell, my opponent asks me about like Shifting Stones, I'm like, all right, if any of my heavies are within any of the Shifting Stones, you need to keep your caster like 10 inches away from the very edge of this line. And then they're like, okay. So that's what it
is. Teleport within 8, not completely within. So the very tiny tip of my base plus my reach, you know, is
actually
4.
12.
So yeah, if you're within 12 inches of a shifting, or if you're in 12 within 12 inches of a stalker that's next to a shifting stone or inside a unit, I might be able to get to you.
It just got super nitpicky, which was bothering me.
That's
because
what wargamers do.
Because ultimately it just comes down to don't be a dick. Lay out all there is to it. There's nothing unsportsmanlike about the question. There's nothing, and I mean, and it came down to also technically, you can just deadpan and toss your cards at your opponent, but then you're a dick. I'm sorry.
Yeah, don't be a dick.
That's just a dickish thing to do.
Yeah, that's not the game we want to play. Like,
you said it like 100 times.
I know, we say it all the time. And I think, here's the thing. I think that, and I'm making a generalization, and this may or may not be true, because I didn't get into that thread. But my guess is the people coming down on your side of it are people that have con experience and have experienced that because that's how it's done normally. People just share their threat ranges. It's very open. It's very casual. You know, it's a good time. Mm-hmm. It's played as a game for fun. I'm sure people play to win. But the competitiveness doesn't cause people to treat people poorly.
Right.
That almost never happens in really high-level play,
and
in my experience.
People are going to ask you the question, what's that model's threat range? And you know the information that they're wanting. I don't always include a push in my threat range, but push is, it's an ability that exists in the game, which you probably know about that.
Yep.
And I don't think, if somebody is, because I've had situations where I've been like, what's that model's threat range? People will be like, oh, speed X and it charges X distance. And I'm like, okay. And I end up putting whatever important model at that distance. And then it gets pushed. And I was like, oh, why do I always forget about pushes? And then boom, the model dies. And I'm not like, you didn't tell me about push. You obviously trying to cheat me. That is not the thought process that goes through my head at that point. It's, oh, God, why did I forget about push yet again?
Well, one time I played against Dom when he was still playing the game, and he was playing Terminus. And I was like, so, Dom, like, tell me if I'm missing anything here. Like, your threat range with Terminus is 12, right? Because he's speed 6, charge 9, and you have Derek Wraith back there to move him. You know, to move him an inch before all of that. So it's, you know, plus reach. So he's got a 12-inch start range, right? He's mm-hmm. like, yeah. And I'm like, okay, so Gristle's just going to, like, be just outside. Like, I'm measuring my control radius. You're outside of my control radius, so you can't charge me. He's like, yeah. And then in his turn, he's like, Madeline Corbo? And I'm like, Dom, you have to tell me that. Like, I asked you. I mean, technically, you answered my question, I guess. But, you know.
Right. And that's
I mean,
one of those.
It wasn't like a, I wasn't like really pissed off or anything like that. And it wasn't like a, like, okay, well, let's go back and undo this whole turn. It was just like, I'm asking wondering about what your caster's threat range is. Like, you need to include all of the stuff that he can do.
I don't like that. And my point is...
Yeah, I got you good.
No, I mean, he wasn't... He honestly forgot about it.
Yeah, he's just like, I'm out of...
That was the honest situation. Like, he forgot. So he wasn't being a dick or anything like that. It was just, like, on his turn, he was like, oh, yeah, I have this. And I was like, oh. And it wasn't painted or anything, and it was, like, in a million, you know...
It was hidden amongst mechanic
yeah,
rolls
like,
or something.
Like it always is, you know, so it wasn't... Mm-hmm. But it was, yeah, it was just...
This may not be an opinion that everybody will agree with or even necessarily will support. But in my opinion, and this is strictly me speaking for me...
The best opinion.
No, it's just my opinion.
Yeah, the best
one. The most humble opinion.
He'll tell you.
There you go.
Like, see, all these guys say that. You never hear me say that. Anyway. On the microphone. Okay, maybe it's happened. I don't know.
Rinth.
Okay, it might have happened once. Maybe. I might have slept.
Would you be willing to bet a dinner on it?
Dinner bet. I feel it.
Hold on. Let me finish my thought before I lose it.
Okay,
is fleeting.
Okay.
Some people will argue that a skill of the game is to knowing all the rules. Right? That's part of the skill of the game. I would disagree. I think the skill in the game comes in the positioning, the target priority, the executing your strategy based on open information. It's like if you want to compare it to chess, everybody knows what the pieces do in chess.
Mm-hmm.
And the strategy of the game comes from utilizing those pieces well, having complete information. And I think that's what War Machine strives to be, is a game like chess in that matter.
Yeah.
Not a gotcha game, not a... Well, you haven't invested... Look, I'm sorry. There's too many complex interactions in the game now. I don't think anybody knows them all. There's a lot of people that know a great deal of them.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, there's like 140 casters.
I mean, we know. Like, I know a lot of the stuff when I go to a tournament, but I still...
I know a lot.
Ask the questions. Like, I'm just, like, I'm just double, like, refreshing myself. Like, against Lost, I was just like, wait, so those guys are that far?
I think all four of us... Sorry, Colin. Know a lot of stuff about this game. Like,
I would
a
say
vast
most
majority.
Everything.
But there's still stuff, even you, Keith, like there's stuff Protective in the fit. Game that I'm Shit. Sure if you sat down against, you'd be like...
Epic Makeda...
Actually, I know this for a fact.
Gaining
Spirit
Fury.
Chaser.
Ground Zero, not generating...
Protective Fit.
Fury was one we ran into just recently.
There are definitely still situations where I'll be sitting down against the caster and I'll get that sort of like, that feeling like, something's not, like, something might happen. Like, I'm not sure 100% if there's goofy tricks that are going to happen. Like, I remember putting Edeni out there against Mordekaiser, and I was like, I feel like there's something random that could kill me, and I can't think of what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was pretty sure, he can revive into me, but I was incorporeal, and I was just like, that's just making sure. But, yeah, there's always little things here and there. And knowing a lot about the game is, I guess you could call it a skill. And what that allows you to do is to make complex decisions quickly. And so that's something that you need at a certain level to expect to play through an entire event or whatever to win a majority of your games. However, this is not to say that it is acceptable to not share any and or all of your information. And the reason that I say this is that when I'm playing a game, I want to get the best practice or the best, even in a tournament, the best practice possible to improve my own game. And in doing that, I need to play with the assumption that my opponent knows everything, that I'm not going to surprise them, what's going to happen is something that they could have predicted. And whether or not they can stop it or not is a question of the mathematics and just the possibilities that are available. I want to play under the assumption that my opponent knows everything, so it never hurts me to tell them anything.
Right.
Because I'm already assuming that they know it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Actually, knowing what's a lot of the rules of the game are, that what models do and everything, is definitely a skill of the game in tournament play. And deciding what list you want to play against what your opponents. Like,
no,
knowing what your stuff...
I'm not arguing that. My point is, some people argue that I shouldn't have to share... You should know what my threat ranges are, right? I shouldn't have to disclose those to you because you should know it, because that's the skill of the game. What I'm railing against is that. Because you should be like Keith and just assume that, okay, you should know what all these threat ranges are, and let's see who has who executes a better strategy, not let's see who remembers, has more retention about, you know.
But yeah, let's see who forgot which models are speed 6 and speed 5.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you what this threat range is. Can you eyeball it? Like, that's something different. I'm not going to measure it for you.
Right.
I'll tell you what it is.
You need to remember, knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying anybody should not learn what models do. I mean, you're going to learn by playing. I mean, that's going to happen anyway. And I'm not saying that you should depend on your opponent to tell you what all their stuff does. What I'm saying is it's an open information game. And if somebody asks you what something simple like a threat range is, they should just give it to you. Like,
I mean, and sometimes the answer is not simple. Like, if someone asks what Mulk's threat range is with Doomshaper, I'm like, well, he can charge 14 with defeat and rush, or he's got a, you know, 14-inch threat with defeat and rush, but then I can also goad.
I can also goad, which does this, and if he's damaged, he's faster.
Yeah, and then people will go, you know, oh, well.
The thing is, if you're playing Doomshaper, most likely you know it. So you should be able to share it.
No, that's what I'm saying, though. Yeah. It's like sometimes you didn't understand me. I'm saying people were saying that they can't just give an easy answer because sometimes the answer is not easy. It's like you just give the answer then.
But that's what I'm saying is the answer is not easy, but you know it inside out because it's your list. So it should be easy for you to share. That's right. All I'm saying.
That's the same thing that I said.
I wasn't disagreeing with you. I was reinforcing what you said.
Good.
Glad we agree.
The worst thing that I've ever seen people do is when someone plays against pirates for the first time. Pirate player's just like, suck my cards, mother F. And they're just like, I can't piece this together. Whenever I play pirates and it's someone who hasn't played pirates before, I'm just like, all right, here's what this unit does. Here's
fun
press gangers.
That was my very first tournament experience.
Right.
That was my very first.
But like, I'll actually play when I'm playing against someone, and I'm just like, these press gangers, Shanghai your guys, kill them and turn them into sea dogs, and then this unit does, you know, kind of describe what the units do. I'm like, but these units are really empowered by these four solos. And I'm like, this one makes them immune to knockdown. This one makes them 4+ tough. This one is bought, and then this one you're never going to be able to kill because he's on the back of the table because it's rock bottom. Here's the order you want to kill them in. Step one, dock. Step
one,
two,
rock bottom.
Well, you're never going to. But, yeah, he's on the back of the table. I'm like, you want to target this troll dude and this black guy.
I know.
I'm just laughing.
It's just funny.
Yeah. And they're just like, okay. Like, usually Hawk is the least relevant one.
It depends.
In the killing order.
Whenever I play, it's like Hawk must die.
Yeah, I mean, you're playing medium-based infantry. She's got to go right away.
But you want to kill rock bottom first so she's not 4+ stuff.
Yeah.
Ultimately, if you want to be good at the game, you have to execute strategies better than your opponent.
Yep.
Based on perfect information. Mm-hmm. That's it. People are going to make mistakes in the execution of those strategies, and somebody may forget about a rule or something. That sometimes happens. But ultimately, if you're going to beat a Jake Van Meter, guess what? You're going to have to outplay him.
I just want to know why, like, psychologically speaking, like, why people are so guarded against this kind of thing. Like, why is it such a big deal for someone to, like, give away all their information? Like, it seems like people are, I don't know, I can only speculate against it, and it's probably, and they all sound bad.
Yeah.
You know, all the reasons are not.
I don't know.
I think it's because people want to win.
Yeah. That's probably what it comes
to. And they
want to
take every advantage that they can get.
Yep.
And if that means not.
I mean, I think some of the people were slightly devil's advocating in the thread, and they were arguing for the point that
people do that on the forums a lot.
Yeah, they were arguing for the point that
the internet,
if you answer the question imperfectly, you could have been seen as attempting to deceive your opponent when you weren't.
Sure, like, I mean, that's
did
like
you didn't include for some reason that you can force hammer my model closer to you if my arc node is behind you and all this other goofy crap. It's like, oh, sure.
That's what I'm saying
just
about that.
Tell your cat. Tell them what include in your list of effects that affect threat range. The spells your caster has that can move their models.
I've actually, I've had that come up in a tournament where I told someone the wrong throw range on my model because I forgot about something like the Corbeau example. Like, I just forgot about this one little thing, and then I was just like, and he moved his caster up like a little into the threat range so that he didn't know existed because I told him the wrong one. But his caster didn't do anything that turn except for like walk and cast some spells, which he could have done in some other way. And I was just like, oh crap. Actually, I forgot this. Move your caster back 2 inches.
Sure.
And he was just like, oh,
Or would you like to move your cat?
Yeah, like I was just like, I have this chance to kill you because I forgot to do this.
That's why I brought up the Corbo situation with Dom. Yeah. It's because it's obviously like he wasn't, I don't believe that he was trying to cheat me. I know that he wasn't trying to cheat me.
Oh, I do. I'm sorry.
But the thing is, like, our listeners don't know Dom the way that you and I do. Know. Like, I don't think he would cheat anybody ever.
No.
And but I mean, like, I can see what, you know, when people say that, you know, they're like, oh, if you give the wrong information, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, yeah, if that, I mean.
The thing is, like, you can devil's advocate it all you want. Why don't you just come to a national convention and watch how it's done? It's not complicated.
It might be a little expensive.
Sometimes it's complicated for people to get to national conventions.
I know. I'm just saying, like, the sharing of information is really quick, and it happens all the time. You can go watch a bunch of games, and, you know, people will just be like, oh, yeah, refresh my memory. Your threat range is, like, 18 inches with that, and they're like, actually, it's 20. I can do this, too.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. And then, yeah, that's it. Like, it's not a big deal.
Yep.
Don't be a dick.
I mean,
what is
your thread keeps coming up. Like, it comes up like once a year.
It does.
You know what? And it's always different flavors of the same argument. You know, I can't remember what it was when it was on our forums a year ago, but people were.
It was on our forums recently, wasn't it?
Whatever. It's always the same.
It will be soon.
Yeah. Yeah.
As of next Wednesday, this thread will reemerge.
What have we done? My God.
I don't know. I'm grumpy. Whatever.
Well. That's episode 89 of Grumpy Warm Gamers.
Warm Gamers?
Warm. I can't talk. I'm tired. Words. Bad.
Words are hard.
Word bad gamers.
You get tired of having the same arguments.
For sure.
Over and over again. And you get tired of just, like, here's my favorite part about War Machine. The community. And playing games is pretty non-stressful for something that's competitive.
Yeah.
In my opinion. Those are my favorite parts about it. It's a game, and it's fun, and it's played by adults, for the most part. Let's not screw that up.
Well,
really, that's all I'm asking.
It's either played by adults or kids who come up with the best rules for models ever.
I mean, yeah, some of the best games I've ever played, some of the funnest games I've ever played were games that I actually lost against players like Chuck and Jake and Nigel.
Yeah.
You know? I mean,
oh, God. Nigel was so fun to play against.
Because those guys are all... I mean, Chuck will actually even remind you if you, or Chuck and Jake, like it'll be like, my guy can charge this. They'll be like, actually, it can charge 2 inches farther than that. You forgot about this rule. And you're like, oh yeah, thanks.
Oh, Chuck, man crush.
Chuck might be my favorite gym teacher of all time.
Oh my God, of I wish he was my gym teacher.
Tulsi teaches gym, too, apparently.
Oh, he does? Mm-hmm. Oh, man, now it's a contest.
Yep.
Uh-oh.
Yep.
He does? He teaches gym?
I think so.
He seems too smart for that.
Wow. Oh, Chuck!
Wow.
We got to practice that.
We do. We got to.
I'll look up those quotes and then.
Well, time to be hitting the old dusty trail.
Actually, we should do a weekly segment or an occasional segment. What really grinds our gears?
We should stop inventing segments. Holy cow.
No, you need more segments.
I guess. Oh, by the way, Lightning Round retired.
Yep. Well,
for briefly. For
temporarily retired. Don't know how long.
It's laid off. It's been laid off.
We need a lightning break.
Is that a very fast break?
What? No, it's a break from lightning.
No, this is the grumble break. You have to grumble away from the lightning.
We don't do that.
Oh, this has been episode 89 of Muse on Minis. I'm Crump.
Yep.
Stop staring at me, Keith. This is Colin.
Yep.
God damn it. He won't stop.
Keith.
You completely broke.
Hump day!
Hump day!
Oh.
Completely broken with butt a stare.
God, yeah, you just... Danny Modesto, Josh, except that was you on Colin.
I don't know why I'm thinking about it right now, but I was talking to Josh on Wednesday, and yeah, end of the podcast, best time for story time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Great.
I was talking to Josh on Wednesday, or it was actually when we were together last Monday. It's irrelevant. And I told him the idea that someone needs to paint their boom howlers like the King of the Hill cast. So that Boomhauer himself can just be Boomhauer.
Mm-hmm.
So every time you activate him, you can just be like, yeah, man, dangle there, man. Dangle there, busy guy. I'm going to do that 4+ stuff, man. Like, every time you do it. Like, you should just think of one for all of his different Falcons.
Well, you just do that, except replace it with Rage Howl or 4+ stuff or...
Stand up for free.
What is that called?
It's Call of Defiance, Rage Howl, and Revelry.
Revelry.
That's one of those.
I don't know the real names of anything.
But you could have like a Hank Hill Boomhauer or Boomhowler. You could have like a Dale Boomhowler.
He's just wearing like raid equipment. Like.
Yeah, and instead of holding a blunderbuss, they just have a beer can.
We'd like to thank you for listening to this episode of Muse on Minis and want to remind you to tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for more analysis and commentary from John, Keith, Chad, Crump, and the rest of the crew. For more Muse on Minis, visit us on Facebook or check us out on Twitter, at Muse on Minis. And don't forget, we're also at MuseOnMinis.com with tons of great articles about the hobby we all love.
Anyway, this is Chad.
And Crump.
Yep.
Yep.
Colin?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Bud?
And John and Lance. Somehow fixed.
And Lance just went.
Stop staring at me, I swear to God.
No, wait. We could have, if we didn't do that right there, Lance could have ended. Lance, go back to where we're going. Yep, yep, mm-hmm. And just going. Dun 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 dun. I can't make cowbell sounds with my mouth, but. Ding 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 ding. Yeah. Do that, Lance.
Do it.
To issue an apology to everyone at Tower Games that weekend because I showed up.
Were you
to
a
Tower
little gassy?
Games. I showed up to Tower Games. I immediately went downstairs where their bathroom is located.
Oh, wow, I was making a joke, but that actually just happened.
Yeah.
And Nigel, Ryan, and Jamie were down there. I went into the bathroom.
Just so you know, that's ground zero.
I went to the bathroom. Too soon, Nick. Too soon. I went to the bathroom.
What?
then Nigel walks out, and Jamie, and they're like, What is that?
Yeah, this story's happening, Keith.
I'd like to issue that apology. I destroyed your bathroom, and I am very sorry for it.
Lance, for the love of God.
And like, all that is holy.
Listen, you don't have to do anything ever on another podcast. Can you just please cut that out? Like, I promise. I will take you out to lunch.
I'll take you out to two lunches if you leave it in.
Damn it, Chad. Why are you working against me?
All right.
It's a bidding war, John.
Jesus Christ.
I'm going into I see three lunches?
Holy crap, I'm going in. All right, so I'm really going to go.
Okay. I really hope that that comes through. Like, since we're holding the mic so far away from our mouth, I hope that it sounds like it's in the back of the room. You know what I mean? That's the effect I was going for.
Oh, my God.